All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, and this is Veterans Radio, and my name is Dale Thronberry, and I was a Chief Warrant Officer helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969, a 195th Assault Helicopter Company. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We've got a great program for you today. I'm anxious to get to our guests right away, and let me tell you what we got coming up today. We're going to be talking with Doug Slocum. Better known as Odie. We'll find out about the Odie in a moment. He's going to be talking about his experiences in the first Gulf War and exactly what the Air Force was up to then. And I'm going to try and get him to talk a little bit about where the Air Force is going today. And in the second half of the program, we're going to be playing an interview that we did with Keith King from Detroit. Keith is the executive director of the National Veterans Business Development Council, and he's going to be talking about their work that they're going to be doing with Amazon and also some of the changes that are going to be going on with veterans businesses regarding the Small Business Association and certification. So I want to make sure that you stick around for both of these great stories. I'm really excited to talk with both of these gentlemen. But before we get into that, I want to make sure that we mention our faithful sponsors, and that is going to be Legal Help for Veterans. As I mentioned before, the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC. The Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and as well as VetBiz Central up in Flint. And I want to thank our three local veteran service organizations. That would be the Vietnam Veterans of America Post 310, Charles S. Kettle's Post, American Legion Post 46, and the Veterans of Foreign War Post 423, all of Ann Arbor. You can learn more about these organizations and the services that they provide by going to our website. That's veteransradio.net/our sponsors. You could also follow Veterans Radio on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and I don't know whether other platforms there are out there, but it looks like we're trying to get ourselves involved with as many social media outlets as we can. Please check out our website. We've got 17 years worth of archived programs on there for you to listen to. So we're going to take a real quick break right now, and then we're going to be coming back with retired Air Force Brigadier General Doug Odie Slocum. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
All right, we're back here on Veterans Radio, and many of you, hopefully all of you, will recognize the Air Force theme, and that kind of leads us right into our first guest today, and that is Doug, better known as Odie Slocum. He's a retired Air Force Brigadier General, spent 35 years in the Air Force, ended up his command, I believe, at the 127th Wing at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. He is on the board of the Fisher House of Michigan, which is another contact that we have together. And I want to welcome Doug to Veterans Radio. Welcome.
Well, Dale, it's nice to be here with you this evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. And thanks for taking time out of your day before we get ready for a little snow here.
You bet. You bet.
All right. Well, I'm going to start this off from something that I saw that you read. And it says, at 2:38 a.m. Baghdad time on the 17th of January, 1991, you were part of the beginning of the air campaign for Desert Storm. How did you get involved in that, and what was your job?
Well, I won't say I was involved with that. I was certainly over there and participating with the coalition. It was kind of interesting. I spent the first part of my career as a F-4 Phantom and then F-16 pilot operational. And I had gotten an assignment to be an F-16 instructor pilot. So I was at Luke Air Force Base. Now, the whole time you're operational, you're ready, you know, to go if the nation calls. Well, once you're an instructor teaching, you don't keep those same ready-to-go type of requirements. And I was out flying a mission one day, it was January. I remember I was taxiing back in, and I got a radio call at the end of the mission that says, don't even go into the squadron, go directly to the vice commander's office. My first thought was, man, I'm in trouble.
That's not going to say that can be good or bad.
Yeah. So anyway, I shut down, went there, and I mean, he was very laid back. It was like, okay, well, I'm not in trouble. Now I'm trying to figure out why I'm there. And a couple other people showed up, and he started talking about a safety board and an airplane that had crashed. And I was sitting there thinking, scratching my head a little bit, because I was at the time an expert in a type of airplane that was only flown in three locations, which is where I was in Arizona, Hill Air Force Base in Utah, and Moody Air Force Base in Georgia. So I was kind of scratching my head going, am I going to Utah or Georgia? When all of a sudden he told us, nope, we're actually going to the Middle East. I was like, whoa, okay, hadn't anticipated this. So it was a pretty much a no-notice pick-up-and-go, but I was actually involved with a safety investigation board over in the Middle East, and we can talk about whatever aspects of that. But I ended up at the crash site and all, and then I was at a base in the United Arab Emirates the night that everything kicked off. And I actually spent it, unfortunately, and much to my chagrin, at the end of the runway watching airplane after airplane taking off. But I was not one of the pilots taking off that evening.
All right, but you did take off eventually, right?
In the war? No, I never did fly any missions in the war there. We ended up coming back to the United States to finish what we were doing over there with the safety investigation.
Okay, the safety investigation things are, what kind of plane was it that crashed?
It was an F-16 that crashed. It was actually right up near the Kuwaiti border at the time. So when we first showed up, we flew into Riyadh, and then we ended up driving up to the northeast, staying at King Khalid Military City, and then driving up from there past the pipeline road. We were about halfway in between there and the Kuwaiti border and really no man's land at the time. So it was kind of a unique experience.
Well, I was doing some research for this, and they were talking about how many aircraft were involved in the air campaign in Desert Storm, and how the military has cut back so much. Could you address that a little bit?
Well, certainly. I mean, at the time, and I don't have the right exact numbers in front of me, but we probably had about three times the number of fighter squadrons than we do now. And in the Cold War, you have to understand that when the first Gulf War hit, we were just having some planes that had some precision weapons type of capabilities. The F-16s that I was an expert in at the time were flying a night system called Lantern that had, a pretty basic infrared type of a display that could be used to help fly and do your mission at night. Nowadays, we've taken precision weapons and all up to a whole new level, and pretty much everything that we drop nowadays is guided or precise. And in the first Gulf War, it was just a small percentage. So, yeah, we would have 60, 70, 80 airplane packages all at one time going in and flying missions. That nowadays, if we were to do something like that, would be, a handful, if not in some cases, a single airplane would perform. So the whole way that our Air Force employs and gets the effect that they want has changed pretty dramatically. But the fact is that our Air Force is smaller, older, and has been used harder than it ever has in its history at this point. So it's kind of an interesting point in the time of history of our U.S. Air Force.
I think it's really important, and I wanted to let our audience know that I got this article from Air Force Magazine, looks like December 1st of 2020, just to get a little background on the Gulf War. My memory fades. It seemed like it's 30 years ago now, and it's almost like rolling into that thing of the Vietnam War. You know, it's so long ago, people don't have any recollection of it anymore.
Yeah, well, even, you know, the timing is so interesting. Once, you know, I've spent 35 years in uniform, even talking about 9/11 now, there are so many people that are involved with our military that were not involved or in some cases not even born at the time and have no memories of that event. So, yeah, when you go all the way back to the first Gulf War, it does in some ways seem like ancient history now.
Absolutely. I was curious because when you just mentioned it a little bit earlier, and I wanted to go back to this, is it said that during the Gulf War there were 134 fighter squadrons, and now there's just 55?
That sounds about right. Like I said, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but yeah, it's
well, that's all right. I'm cheating on you here. I'm sorry. I have them here in front of me. It's a concern, I guess, that we should all be aware of is that the average fighter is now 27 years old, not the person, the aircraft. And in fact, many of the aircraft are older than 50 years old.
Yeah. You know, the backbone of a lot of our Air Force right now, especially some of the big airplanes, our KC-135s and B-52 bombers are, I think the youngest of them are like 57 or 58 years old. And, they are going to be flying as 100-year-old airplanes. That's the plan right now, is we will have some of these pioneering aircraft that are going to be flying in our Air Force for 100 years. The fighter airplanes, they've learned how to extend the lives of them. The airframe lives and all, and they just keep plugging along, and they get used at a pretty tremendous rate right now with the deployments that we've had that have been consistent pretty much since that first Gulf War.
It was astonishing to me to read this article, and I'm sorry to kind of blindside you with this, but it was something I thought that would be, you know, important, as you mentioned, the B-52, and for the Vietnam veterans, that was there, and it was there before Vietnam. So it's, as you say, 100-year aircraft
when we were at Selfridge, we had the KC-135 tankers, and they were built about the same time frame as the B-52s. And when I would talk in public, I said, not only are the last pilots to fly this plane not born yet, the parents of the last pilots to fly these airplanes are not born yet. To try and frame it to people to understand the lifespan, and it's miraculous what our maintenance individuals can do, keeping these things flying and operating, but we have some challenges in the Air Force keeping things going right now. It is a very aged fleet that we're dealing with. The new airplanes are very expensive, and you cannot replace one for one.
No, and one of the things that I noticed was that they were talking about is that other countries have caught up with us regarding our aircraft, in addition to their defense mechanisms, that they're much more sophisticated than they were, in Iraq 30 years ago.
Oh, certainly. We always talk about, for example, air dominance. And when you talk about the new, the words from the new chief of staff of the Air Force is that dominance is definitely in play right now and is being challenged. The decisions we make and the way we go forward, he put out a paper not long after taking the oath of office this last summer, talking about accelerate change or lose. And it's a profound way of looking at how we structure and employ our Air Force with the resources that we have, and that it needs to change, or that gap is continuing to close, and we do not want it to flip where we can't do what we need to as a U.S. Air Force.
Well, right. I'm going to put this mildly. It just seems that, we've got a brand new administration coming in, and we are hoping that they're going to be, looking at this as far as upgrading the equipment that we've been using for, over 20 years now. And the Air Force has become a more important part of the package. I mean, there's the Air Force would go in and, bomb everything that they could bomb. And, and then the troops go in and, we have to figure out a way of modernizing all of that. As I was mentioning, the defense mechanisms, not only do we have the equipment to determine when the bad guys are coming toward us, now the bad guys have the equipment that can tell. One of the things I saw where it says that they can find us almost 400 miles off out from our targets.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, those capabilities have really jumped up in recent years from our adversaries that are out there. And the fact is, now, I can't address the, you know, the administration that's coming in now. I have not read any policies or inputs in terms of what they have planned. But, you know, our U.S. military has been used and has been focused primarily on what we would call the low-end fight, you know, the counterinsurgency efforts in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in a lot of ways, we have neglected what we would call the near-peer type of a fight to go against a China or a Russia or somebody that has a lot more advanced capabilities. But when you look at any of our potential adversaries, all of their capabilities have been increasing much more, I think, on a scale that's bringing us closer to parity with them, and that's not good for us. We, as I used to say, when it comes to our military, we don't ever want a fair fight. We want it to be completely tilted in our direction.
No, you never want to. That's true. You never want a fair fight. Those with the biggest guns win, and the most guns win. And I think that that's something that we have to take into consideration. I didn't mean to get off topic here. I want to know a little bit more about Doug Odie. Where did Odie come from?
Oh, that's always a great question. when I joined the Arizona Air National Guard, I got out of active duty after 7.5 years, and I've been full-time guard ever since for the remaining of my 35 years. But when I first joined the Arizona Guard, I was the newest, youngest instructor pilot that they had in the organization. And as I said, you had the whole totem pole of about 100 instructors in the three squadrons we had, and I was a little squished face on the bottom. And they pushed my additional duty in addition to flying was taking care of the briefing rooms, which was, you know, cleaning up after people, taking care of books and publications. It was probably the least sought out job that you could possibly think. And I did that for almost my first 3 years there. And it was a young lady who worked in our command post one time who said that I always did this terrible job without ever complaining or griping. And I was kind of like Garfield's little dog, Odie, always getting kicked and never complaining. And she looked at me one day and went, "Arf!" No, and that's stuck at that point. So Odie is Garfield's little dog, and that's where it comes from.
Okay. Do you prefer Odie or do you prefer Doug?
Most people call me Odie. So, you know, you've got your Maverick Goose and all those types of fighter pilot call signs, and I have the fear-striking fighter pilot call sign of Odie the dog.
Oh, that's great. That is really great. I mentioned here that you you ended up as your final command of the 127th Wing at Selfridge.
Yeah, that was a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, and what did that entail?
Well, I had been in Washington, D.C., and my 5 years in Washington, D.C., I was the director of safety, and then I was the inspector general for the Air National Guard. And I kind of figured I'd end up retiring back in D.C. and becoming a Beltway bandit or doing something back there in government. And somebody approached me one day, and they said they were looking for a commander. They wanted somebody from the outside. They wanted a fresh look to come in and kind of reinvigorate the base and the wing. So I actually applied for, interviewed, and was selected for the position at Selfridge. But what a fantastic opportunity. Selfridge is a gem that I think we need to tell a lot of people about in the state of Michigan. One of the oldest continually operating military airfields, but it's currently not only one of the biggest Air National Guard wing with two different flying missions, but there are 45 other organizations that call Selfridge home too. So it's like this big intergovernmental coalition. All on this one facility out there. It's pretty amazing to see the things that happen.
I know when COVID's done, whenever that might be, I'm sure that they're going to, you know, I've been out there a couple of times and it is very impressive, very impressive. Just to see planes going, well, you know, pilots just like to see planes land and take off because they always, that's the most challenging part of flying anyway.
Well, from a safety perspective, I can tell you it's certainly the statistically most dangerous part of any flights, the taking off and landing. I guess that's why I would never join the Navy. I never wanted my takeoff and landings to be the most exciting part of a flight.
No, somebody mentioned that. Somebody sent me a video of a helicopter trying to land on a Navy. It was a small Navy ship with a little tiny pad, helipad on it, and it looked like it was in the middle of a storm. I just said, no, thank you. No, I tried to land on I landed on a ship one time, and that was enough of an adventure for me. I didn't need to
hopefully
do that
in an airplane, right?
Pardon?
Hopefully, it was in an airplane, right?
No, it was on it was in a helicopter.
Oh, in a helicopter. Okay.
Which was I don't know. I guess if it was. Everybody that I've talked to that ever landed on a carrier told me, you know, obviously it was the most frightening thing they ever had to go through because, you know, it kept moving up and down. But anyway, it was kind of exciting. I wanted to talk to you also about your newest position with the Michigan the Air Force Association of Michigan. You're their new president.
Yep. And come 1 January, I took over. I'm the president of the Air Force Association of Michigan. And really, it's a nonprofit whose job is to advocate for our men and women who wear the uniform so that we can have a dominant air and space forces. It covers that now, including our space force. Mm-hmm. So that whole idea of being able to go out and support the men and women, really, it's three things: educate, advocate, and support. We want to tell the story. We want to teach about what's going on, advocate for aerospace power on all different levels, and then support those wearing the uniform and those who used to wear the uniform.
How many Air Force veterans are there in Michigan? Do you know that? Approximately?
I saw an estimate of that one time. I wanted to say, I'm guessing again without the numbers in front of me, but I was thinking there was about 60,000 total across the state. So I'm really looking forward to expanding the Air Force Association because right now it's very focused in the Detroit area, you know, reinvigorating some chapters. We have one up in the Upper Peninsula, but Alpena, Battle Creek, eyeballing like the Traverse City area and all, just to be able to increase that reach and the effectiveness of the Air Force Association.
Well, that's a big task kind of to spread out. I know there's a lot of organizations for the different branches of the military that are trying to, you know, expand their memberships and trying to just let people know, that they're there to help out their fellow veterans.
Yeah. And there are a lot of great organizations. And to me, it's just like, you know, whether it's flying an F-16 or being a commander at Selfridge, whenever I'm given a challenge, my first question is, who's on my team? Mm-hmm. So it's building that coalition. It's about teamwork. It's about partnerships, you know. So these organizations, we should all be working together, and we're doing that outreach now and, once again, trying to build this great coalition so that we're all speaking with one voice to be able to take care of the wonderful folks who take care of us.
Absolutely, absolutely. I also wanted to mention that you also have run your own private corporation where it's an LLC. It's Look of Consulting. What is it that you do there?
That's primarily, I've had that for quite a while, and it's public speaking, leadership development, training, education, those types of things. Historically, worked with a lot of municipalities. I spent a lot of time in my Air Force career teaching organizational behavior and leadership, and I used to travel and teach that quite a bit. So it's my way of basically being able to take those same skill sets that we were able to dramatically improve the safety of the U.S. Air Force, and to take those same skill sets outside those boundaries to corporations, government entities, and the like.
Okay. I also see that you are on the board of the Fisher House of Michigan. How is that going?
Oh, what a wonderful organization that is, Fisher House. The easiest way to describe Fisher House is like a Ronald McDonald House, but for veterans. So an organization that started a while back that builds homes or facilities near veterans hospitals and ultimately turns it over to the VA, but is places where families can come and stay for free when their loved ones and family members are in a VA hospital and facility. Because, you know, having the family right there, supporting them is the way that we can support our veterans and those that have taken care of us. So it's a great way to pay it forward. What a wonderful organization with Fisher House. We have one right now in the Ann Arbor area in Michigan, and we're actively working on one in the Detroit area. And anybody has any questions about it, just go Google Fisher House, Michigan, and you can find out all sorts of wonderful information.
All right, and I would encourage them our program originates in Michigan, so I would encourage people, if they get the opportunity, Well, right now you can't go into the house, but you can drive by the Ann Arbor VA and you can see the Fisher House. It's a beautiful new building there. And I believe they can house up to 16 families at a time, which is pretty awesome when you think about it.
And then, like you said, you know, I had my experiences a little bit with that, and most everybody involved with the Fisher House board has had some experience with it. But I had a couple back surgeries when I was on active duty and ended up in Walter Reed. And to be there is pretty humbling, you know, because I'm sitting here griping about my back, but I'm in a ward that's filled with amputees and folks that have been grievously wounded overseas. And a lot of them had their family that was there to be with them to help them heal because of the Fisher House, in that case, in Maryland. The Fisher House motto is, a family's love is good medicine.
Well, we're going to end it on that. I want to thank you, Doug Odie Slocum, retired Air Force Brigadier General, for being on Veterans Radio today. And I would like to talk with you again in the next couple of months about the Air Force and, you know, what they need to do to strengthen, you know, to become a little bit stronger in the future. How's that sound?
Oh, we can do that anytime, Dale. It's so wonderful. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you all tonight.
Well, thank you very much. So we will be in touch, and thanks for being on Veterans Radio.
God bless. Take care, and thank you for all the veterans that are listening in for your service to our country.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Keith King of the, where did I put it? It's just right here somewhere, NVBDC. That's what it is. And so we're going to take this break right now, and we'll be back shortly.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Major Bernard Fisher's wingman was shot down and the North Vietnamese were closing in on him. Fisher radioed to the other aircraft, "I'm going in." Details after this. A Special Forces camp in Oshawa Valley was on the verge of being overrun. Fisher and five other aircraft flew in at 300 feet to deliver their ordnance. Then they turned and went in for a strafing run when his wingman, Major Jump Myers, was hit. Myers crash-landed on the camp's airstrip and hid in the underbrush. Strafing around Myers, Fisher called for a helicopter rescue. When he heard the choppers were at least a half hour away, Fisher decided to go in. His first try was aborted when he was going too fast to stop. On his second try, Fisher brought his A1E to a stop, turned it around, and taxied to where Myers was hiding. Myers rushed out, climbed onto the wing, and Fisher pulled him into the cockpit. Then Fisher pushed forward on the throttle and started his takeoff run. With heavy fire from both sides, he managed to get enough airspeed to take off. Upon returning to play coup, his ground crew counted 19 holes in his aircraft. President Lyndon Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on January 19, 1967.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio today, and our next guest is a pre-recorded interview that my partner Jim Falsone did with Keith King. And Keith is the executive director of the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as the NVBDC. Keith is also a Vietnam veteran and a supporter of Veterans Radio. And so we always want to make sure that we can get their stories out. And he is going to be talking with Jim about the connection that the NVBDC now has with Amazon, and also there are some pending information about what's going to happen with veteran-owned business certification that is going to be handed off to the Small Business Administration. So we're going to go to that interview, and I'll be back when that is over. So here is Jim Falzone and Keith King.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Keith King, founder and CEO of National Veteran Business Development Council, commonly known as NVBDC.org. Keith, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always good to be with you, and you know, wish you the best in 2021.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Most people I talk to are glad 2020's gone.
Absolutely. Let me remind our Veteran Radio listeners that the National Veteran Business Development Council, or NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses of all sizes. This is a 501c3 nonprofit. It's been around now for about 7 years. It addresses the growing need to identify and certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses in government and commercial corporate marketplace. It's a rigorous certification process, but worth it, and actually designed to withstand the scrutiny of governmental and corporate entities seeking to utilize service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. And Keith, as we transition from 2020, which was a bad year for everybody in one way or another, and we move into 2021, tell me what's new in 2021 for NVBDC.
Well, a couple of things that I wanted to share with your audience in particular, for those of the audience members who had heard the interview that you did with Abby from Amazon, I am now pleased to tell you that another division of Amazon has also joined us. And that is really the business to business section, where if you're doing business with other companies and you want to do that through the Amazon platform, we've already set up with Amazon an 8-week webinar training program. If you'd be interested in that, it kicks off in early February, but you know, shoot us an email or get a hold of us, you know, give us a call, whichever. But this actually opens up not only, and what we have done, we've decided you do not have to be certified with the NVBDC to attend the webinars. What we're doing here is want to open up these doors to as many veteran-owned businesses as possible, go through the webinars with us, learn what it is you really need to do to be successful. We are bringing in a whole lot of resources. If you need catalogs, if you need a bunch of other, you know, operational things, we have the support, warehousing, logistics, shipping, all of those things. So it's really quite a big effort, and we're really pleased. We're really excited about it. So that's kicking off, like I said, in early February. But we love to be able to open the doors, if you will, in a company like Amazon or any of the other 85 corporate sponsors that we have. But this one is really kind of a new way for us to come out to the market as well and say, hey, if you want to do business, we're trying to make it easy for you to work with Amazon. So that's kind of the first big piece of news that I'd like to share, Jim.
Well, it's a great way to kick off the new year and sort of new marketing opportunities for veteran-owned businesses, whether they're certified or not. There's a lot of advantages to being certified that we can have talked about and can talk about. And I'd recommend folks go, if you're kind of interested in, hey, what's Amazon, this billion-dollar company, doing in the military and veteran space, go listen to Abby Mulchow. She was the project team leader for the global military team. And she was talking about what they're doing to help veteran businesses. And honestly, Amazon has a huge footprint of veterans in the corporation. But this is great news to hear B2B at Amazon is also going to be a corporate sponsor for NVBDC. Why don't you explain what the corporate sponsors are about, Keith?
Well, one of the transitions, if you will, that we had to make, and we being veteran-owned businesses that, like myself, were very, very early participants in the federal contracting space For those who don't really know the history, the law that created us, us being veteran-owned businesses and service-disabled veteran-owned businesses, was passed in 1999. Shortly after the law passed, I got a phone call from my guys in D.C. saying, hey, you know, you're one of the few, you know, service-disabled veteran businesses that we know that are open and running and operating. We'd like you to basically become our guinea pig and try all this federal contracting stuff.
And that's what you do with an Army vet from Vietnam. You say, hey, you're going to be our guinea pig.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, you want me to do what? But, you know, I mean, it did. I mean, truly changed my business. It changed the scope of my business. I mean, it was to, you know, do a commercial, if you will, type business to business versus doing government business. It's two different worlds. And anyways, and the fact that as that developed over the years, in the sense of the VA getting involved in the CBE program coming online, all those things that I, as a businessman and frankly as a veteran advocate, was deeply involved in. After actually 14 years of doing that, one of the things that we ran into was the law said that if the corporation was doing federal contracting, that they were required to submit a subcontracting program that included women, minorities, and then veterans. And that, of course, changed our market to a small extent. But what we found out was that the corporations were not including veterans in their response. And I went through a bid in which I was bidding as a subcontractor to a large contract. That basically what happened in that case is the company that won the master contract, or the prime, if you will, decided that they wanted to keep the subcontracting money, not only from the veterans, but from the women and minorities. Unfortunately, the department of the government said, yeah, okay. Well, this was a huge $800 million contract, and most of the subcontracting programs were not as large as this one, but this was a 30% subcontracting, and they wanted to keep the 30%. Now, Jim, I know you're probably better at math than I am, but 30% of $800 million is a whole lot.
That's $240 million if anybody needs to know the score.
Well, you know, and again, if you start breaking down 10% here, 15% here, that's still a whole lot of money. And the point being is, is that corporations had a higher standard. What we did in the NVBDC is create a certification program that met those standards. And because of that, in what I call the goodwill of the corporations, much like Amazon and the other companies that you're aware of who are our corporate members, began for the first time ever to accept veteran businesses in their supply chain. And it's under the guise, if you will, or under the classification of supplier diversity, which the minority's been involved in for 45 years, women for 25. And as you'd mentioned in the intro, we've been doing this 7 years. But the beauty of that was, is that gave veteran businesses a whole new market, a whole new opportunity to do business with corporate America. And one of the things that has come up that I wanted to talk to you about, I guess, you know, the old circle of life things, was a report about the CVE, the VA program, is basically going away. It's being transferred over to the SBA. And that would affect tens of thousands of veteran-owned businesses who, in one form or another, have either been involved with the VA or been involved in what we call self-certification, and frankly, a lot of the government still accepts self-certification because the idea is they want to eliminate self-certification. And the reason for that is something I believe you and I have talked about, the fraud. 500 million in the VA, 800 and some million in the Department of Defense. I mean, the fraud is just so rampant in the federal government, they had to do something.
Yeah, and this should surprise nobody. Maybe the timing will, maybe the implementation will, but it's not, to me, it's not a surprise to move away from self-certification now that there are third-party certification entities that NVBDC is the leader of. So I guess it's... As you say, the circle of life, it was somewhat inevitable that we would get here, but it sounds like that's going to be one of the changes in 2021.
Well, yeah, and they're basically, you know, moving to begin the implementation of the rules, the regulations, the FAR, all of those different things. And frankly, that's one of the reasons, Jim, really, I would like to ask for the help of your listeners. They don't necessarily have to be veterans or even veteran business owners. But what we, the NVVDC, is committed to doing is to make sure that the program that the SBA is going to want to inherit from the VA, and the fact that they are using a word, and it is more in semantics, by the way, they are actually asking for and saying they want to create a certification program to a different level or a different standard. And like I said, they want to eliminate self-certification. But again, the idea that there are different levels, if you will, of certification, there's different standards. We want to make sure that anyone who is, you know, listener who has either contacts with the incoming SBA, has contacts with the you know, incoming House members or senators, especially on any of the committees of the SBA or government committees, that think they would be able to make an introduction for us, be able to help open the doors of conversation. You know, we're not talking about the kind of politics of Republican, Democrat. We're talking about the advocacy work. And those who know me have claimed that I've been political my entire, you know, adult life anyways. And I don't deny that, because if you look at what we have been able to accomplish now, we in this sense is those of us who consider ourselves to be veteran advocates, and the legislation and all the efforts that it went into to get the GI benefits, to get medical help from the VA, all the different things that we have been able to accomplish. Someone has to go knock on doors and say, hey, we want to talk to you about this issue.
It's educational. Keith, you're absolutely right. You have to educate the congressmen, the senators, and more importantly, their staff about what certain issues mean as they go about trying to develop rules, regulations, statutes. So, yeah, I absolutely understand the need for that level of education in Congress and in Washington, D.C., and we'd ask any of our veteran radio listeners who have an interest in this issue, have contacts at the SBA or with a congressman or woman who you know is very involved with the SBA and with veteran issues, to reach out to NVBDC. Keith, where's a good place that people can reach out to you on?
Well, of course, on our website, you know, which is, you know, the NVBDC.org. There's a place there that you can leave messages. Those messages, you can address them to me. Hey, I want to talk to Keith King about, you know, helping with the SBA. Those will all get directly to me. Our phone number, of course, is the 888-CERTIFIED. Those calls, any of those calls that come in to that line, who somebody says, hey, I want to help with the SBA, will get directed to me. Or I'll tell you what, I'll just give you my direct line, even though my assistant will, you know, have a heart attack here.
Yes, yes, she will.
But,
go ahead.
You know, she's well paid, so, and she's young, so she can handle it. But, you know, 313 416-6885 is my direct line at work. Call me. I mean, again, the thing that we're, and thank you for talking about the staff, Jim. I think those of us who've been involved in it know that in many cases, the individual politician or the individual senator or congressperson really relies on their staff. Most of these things are done behind the scenes with staff that we present the ideas, the concepts, and they do their work in working with, you know, the elected official, because we've been able to accomplish a lot over the years only because we've been able to sit down and not only work with the staff, but work behind the scenes to get legislation written. And this is going to be something that, again, even the information that I'm getting, they think it's going to take at least a year, maybe 2 years, to actually enact this. But to me, I guess what? On Wednesday, the new administration comes in, and on Thursday, I want to start making calls. You know, I think that, again, we need to get in front of this. And if anyone who, you know, is one of your listeners, can help us do this, or, you know, is actually located in D.C., or, you know, I know the traveling is still an issue, but we want to mount a veteran business advocacy organization group, if you will, to say, hey, if you're going to do it right, listen to us, because as we know, and again, why the VA lost this, frankly, is because they wouldn't listen.
Well, and it certainly wasn't their primary mission, and so you kept getting pushed down and down and down in terms of the priority for any VA secretary, and that's a whole nother discussion. So, let me tell Veteran Radio listeners, as we talk to Keith King, founder and CEO of NVBDC, you have to be in there early to help shape these ideas. When a bad idea starts getting, you know, built into the paperwork that all the staffers read, you're in trouble. You have to be there early. So I applaud NVBDC for taking, once again, a leadership role here. And if you've got a contact, a relative, somebody who might be on a staffer level that has jurisdiction or interest in business issues, the SBA, veteran issues, those are the kind of grassroots contacts that NVBDC is looking for, and you can contact Keith King by going to their website, nvbdc.org, or calling 888-CERTIFIED. Keith, let's give the listeners kind of one final push here. Tell them why this is so important.
Well, what we were able to do on the government side, again, the guys like Bill Elmore and people I'm proud to call my friends, spent years writing the original law that we didn't get passed until 99. There were multiple years to actually get the law passed that created veteran businesses in the federal sense in the first place. And without guys like Bill and the staff and all the other guys who were involved early on this, I consider myself one of the people who were involved. I just have so much respect for the work that everybody did. By the time it got to me, it was like, hey, I'm in. Tell me what I need to do. But the other laws that followed that is, again, because of the work of the advocacy of our veterans and going in and sitting down and talking. So we kicked open a multi-billion dollar industry for veteran businesses in the federal government. You know, and the rough numbers in the beginning was 13 to 15 billion. Now, follow that later on when we created the NVBDC and went to the corporations and we kicked that open, which again, this had never existed until we put this together 7 years ago. We've kicked open an $80 billion market. So if you start looking at the financial opportunities that we have created both at the federal level and the state level, and now the federal level again is going to become modified. Shame on us if we're not a part of that, if we're not shaping that, if we're not making sure that when they put it together this time, they are listening to veteran businesses. So I think when you start looking at the true impact, it's something that we believe at the NBVDC, which is self-employment, entrepreneurship is in many ways the best form of employment. You not only control your own business, you control your own life, but what we have seen over and over again is veterans hire veterans. We will begin to grow and help support the local community of those businesses. We help to support their families. Their family life becomes more stable. We know the positive impact of having a job, having a business, and having been successful in it as a tremendous self-worth. That's really hard. You know, Jim, you know, you own your own. You know, I've been running my own company since 84, for God's sake. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that, again, if somebody's got an interest, please don't sit on your hands. Pick up a phone, call us, email us, contact us. We want to make sure that we're involved in this.
Well, thanks, Keith. As always, it's great to talk to another veteran advocate with as much passion as you have. The work that's being done at NVBDC.org is truly historic. And this is a call to arms. This is a time for veterans and veteran business owners to say, I'm going to get involved. Maybe it's a little bit, maybe it's a lot, but I'm going to get involved and let you know who my congressional contacts are so that maybe you can reach out to them and help them shape this in a way that's good for all veterans. Keith, thanks, as always, for coming on Veterans Radio.
Well, Jim, thank you again. I truly appreciate the opportunity, and you guys are doing a great job. That's why, you know, we not only support you as well, but because I think that the more our vets work together, the stronger we are. You know, it's just like back in the days of the military. You know, when you were working with a team, you protect your team and you do what you need to do to make sure that your team comes home. And that's what we're trying to do today. And thank you for the opportunity to let the guys and gals know this is something big and it's going to happen. So jump on board and help us to help you.
Absolutely. Let's help each other here. As veteran-owned businesses are really important out there to our audience of veteran-owned businesses. If you want to get involved in a veteran-owned business, the NVBDC is a great place you can go for help, or to our other sponsor, VetBiz. They can help you with business plans. They can help you find funding, and they can help you get certified. And the certified thing, just to remember, is have to be 51% of the business has to be owned by a veteran. And this is where some of the fraud comes in, because what they'll do is they'll hire a veteran to work for the company, and then they'll claim that they're veteran-owned, but not really. So it's very important that we follow up on this. And I'm going to ask you out there, I'm going to give you Keith King's number again if you have questions. And the number is 313-446-6885. 313-446-6885. That's Keith King with the NVBDC.org. It is important. I want to thank everybody for listening today. It's been a pleasure to bring you this information from Doug Slocum about the Air Force and where it was and where it's going, and things that he is involved with here in Michigan. And I think it's important that if you have somebody you would like us to talk to, please contact us here at Veterans Radio. Just go to our website, veteransradio.net, click on contact, and we will follow up on it and get those people on the air. I think it's really important. We love to tell war stories, but we love to tell about the success stories that our veterans have had over the years. I want to remind you that next week is going to be our benefits program. And this is always kind of a monthly gig that we have. And it's important because we're going to have the director of the Ann Arbor VA is going to be on the program to talk about what the future may look like in the VA, at least locally. We are also going to have VSO people here to answer your benefit questions. And so if you do have any questions, please contact us at Veterans Radio. You can send me an email. That's dale@veteransradio.net. And we will get your question on the air and get it answered for you. The VA can be kind of a a lost highway sometime that seems to be going in circles everywhere. So we want to make sure that we can help you navigate that program. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, we would love to have your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on either sponsors, or you can make a donation, because Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio America, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and any deduction that you have may be tax deductible. You need to talk to your tax advisor on that. So we're always excited to talk with you about what Veterans Radio has been up to. You can catch our podcasts every Tuesday. We put up a 20-minute, 30-minute podcast with a veteran, or the one that was mentioned in the interview with Keith, with the Amazon people, about their veterans program. So every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, that goes up. Today's program will be going up as a podcast tomorrow morning at 11. And you can also go to our website, as I mentioned before, and listen to, I don't know, what have we done, about 850 programs? So they're all there. So we would encourage you to do that. If you have any comments or concerns about Veterans Radio, please let us know what we can do better, and we'll do it. That's what we have to do. We want to stay on the air as long as we possibly can. 17 years is pretty good, and we'd like to go a little bit further. So until next week, we will be back at that time, as I mentioned, with a benefits program and many more stories to come in the future. And until then, you are dismissed.